And I apologize in advance. I'm an optimist by nature, so I was looking at plane schedules like, yeah, I can make that plane. And then, you know, I didn't really sit down and do the math. So I do apologize for speaking and running, but I am leaving you in the very capable hands of my colleague, Nancy Miller. So I would also like to acknowledge the contribution of our RA, Lucas Gloss, who has worked quite hard with these data, and once again, the support of NIDR on this project, and there are otherwise no conflicts of interest. So I'll sort of pick up a little bit where Nancy left off, and that's sort of the policy motivation for this work. The first is, as she noted, there is a strong association in the literature between having the usual source of care and sort of all sorts of good things happening, particularly healthcare utilization. The ACA, in a number of provisions, sort of emphasizes and promotes and tries to reward things like primary care access and care coordination, things that might plausibly sort of go along with these sort of enhanced levels of access to care and what sort of provider you see. And alongside that are also some incentives for that recognize the value and the importance of preventive care services. So that's sort of another policy theme motivating this particular area of work. And then finally, there are these ongoing concerns, as Nancy mentioned, about disparities both amongst different races and ethnicities, and also the role that having a disability might also play in the role of disparities as sort of a population of interest, as Nancy put it. So we have two broad aims here. One is to examine the relationship between the usual source of care and the receipt of preventive services. And well, I'll take this a step further and explore the role of race and ethnicity as a moderating factor. And I'll sort of explain how I go about doing that in just a moment. I won't spend too much time on the Anderson model since, once again, Nancy set things up for me very nicely. I guess I would like to use this as an opportunity actually to flag some limitations of this particular work, and that's that I always worry a little bit, and this probably comes partly from having been trained as economists, about sort of things that we can't measure or don't measure well, and particularly some of these need measures and perhaps these predisposing measures may not be fully measured in these models. And so some of these results sort of raise as many questions as they may answer, so I just want to sort of flag that in advance, that usual source of care may be endogenous, it may be picking up all sorts of things that we're not measuring very well elsewhere in our model. That said, we do use the MAPS, as Nancy said, and we combine five panels from 2001 to 2007, and we wind up with roughly 8,000 individuals or so. And for my analyses, I'll be looking at two separate groups just to add a little complexity, though that's already a little bit complicated, and that's what I'll call middle-aged adults, although I keep hearing my husband joking, you know, you're middle-aged at 50 if you're going to live to be 100. But for convenience, I'll refer to them as middle-aged, and then elderly or older individuals, which are 65 plus. And then, as Nancy mentioned, we do incorporate statistical methods that that accommodate the complex survey design of MEPS. So our outcome measures are a broad range of sort of loosely defined preventive care measures, varying from something that should be pretty universal at any clinical encounter, such as blood pressure, to something that takes a fair amount of planning and initiative on an individual's part, such as getting a colonoscopy. And these also include preventive care for particular to women, and then also sort of clinical conversations about lifestyle changes in terms of exercise counseling for persons who are obese, and then smoking cessation advice for smokers. And I should add, all of these are self-reported in the MEPS, and that's another important limitation to keep in mind. Our regressors of interest in terms of independent variables are race and ethnicity and the three categories of type of usual care in terms of no usual source of care, place as a usual source of care, and then cases in which the respondent responded affirmatively that in fact they had a particular person that they saw regularly as a usual source of care. And also in the model I include age and marital status and education, income, region, weight status, whether or not they're in an MSA, and self-reported health status. Now missing from that list in this case, and this is a little bit different from Nancy's analysis, is insurance. And so this is a little bit of a self-inflicted wound in terms of leaving something out of a model, but the reason is simply that given that insurance is virtually universal at the older age group, that rather complicates including insurance for the younger age groups. And I haven't done this sensitivity analysis specifically, but in other work that we've done, those findings have been fairly robust to the sensitivity analysis of including insurance in the model for younger individuals to ensure that it's not kind of driving all the things that we found otherwise. So the analytic approach goes something like this. So we estimate separate regressions for what I call these middle-aged and elderly adults, all with disabilities. Once again, disability defined just as Nancy defined it in terms of Barbara Altman's concept of you have some functional limitation or a physical disability or something along those lines or some combination. Now, the next step is where things get a little bit different. I create what I colloquially call pigeonholes, or here what I call dyads. So possible combinations of your race and ethnicity and your type of usual source of care. So for example, you could be a white person with no usual source of care. And then essentially one way of thinking about these is that it's an alternative approach to including an interaction term in the regression, particularly when you have these categorical variables, where you just sort of go ahead and create mutually exclusive categories that reflect these combinations of states of the world. And then I estimate these Loget models and use those to get predicted probabilities that are adjusted for everything else in the model of the outcome of interest for each state of the world in terms of race, ethnicity, and what your usual source of care is. And then we'll test for differences between those dyads, and this is sort of something that will happen in the future. It's not something I'm going to focus on today. This is very much a work in progress. But eventually, given that I've looked at two age groups, I want to talk a little bit at some point about differences between those two age groups. So briefly, some descriptive statistics just to give you a sense. And these are descriptive statistics for our outcome variables. So as I mentioned, blood pressure tends to be pretty universal. Colonoscopy and exercise advice, not so much. So we have sort of a range of optimality here. And then also I wanted to show you some descriptive statistics for our key variables of interest. And in particular, as Nancy noted, I would point out for this particular population group, so middle-aged and older adults with disabilities, overwhelmingly, the norm is to have a person as a usual source of care. And with that in mind, I'm about to show you a bunch of different pictures. So if you're a table person, you may be gritting your teeth for the next few minutes. But I'm going to walk you through this first one. And because the subsequent ones look a lot like this, hopefully you'll sort of learn to read them quickly and sort of recognize patterns as I talk a little bit through what's going on. And since I have some cheat sheets about what's significant, some of the significant differences. So The first thing to note is that you have two groupings of three. So the first is these people that are over 50 but younger than 65, and then the one group to the right is 65 and over. So that's the first distinction to pay attention to. Now, then you have little groups of three, and these represent races and ethnicities. So the blue is white individuals, the orange is Hispanic, and the green is black. And on the axis here, you have the predicted probability of the outcome having occurred. So in this case, was blood pressure, had they had their blood pressure measured in the past year. And so starting to look at, make sense of some of these things, the first thing to know, and this is something, a general picture to take note of that pretty much holds for all of these, is this general, in this case gentle, because you're starting at a pretty high level, this general march upward as you go from no usual source of care to a place to a person. Now statistically, and I'll walk you through this, generally going from no usual source of care to a place tends to be more statistically significant than necessarily going from a place to a person, or I'll talk a little bit about that at the end. But in this case, for the middle-aged people, going from a place to a person is significant for Hispanics and whites. Going from none to a place is significant for all three racial and ethnic groups. And the other thing to note, and this is another something that kept sort of popping up in many of these analyses, is if you look at the group of people who have no usual source of care, blacks, both blacks and Hispanics in the middle age group, were more likely than whites to have received the service in spite of having the suboptimal source of care. So that's another pattern that you may start noticing. Once again, for the elderly, going from none to having a place is significant for all three race and ethnicity groups. Similarly, with cholesterol, once again, going from no usual source of care to a place is significant for whites and Hispanics for middle-aged. And once again, for middle-aged, blacks and Hispanics are also more likely than whites to have received that service even in the context of having no usual source of care. For elderly, going from none to a place matters for all three. And as you can generally see, when you don't see a lot of difference amongst the race and ethnicity groups in the bars, that's probably not statistically significant. In this case, it's not. Going to something, as I said, that requires a little more planning and perhaps funds and initiative on the person's part, something like colonoscopy. In this case, the first thing I'd point out here is that Hispanics are a definite outlier throughout here, so you wind up with these sort of these little gaps in the bars, and that's because Hispanics tend to have significantly lower rates for these services across all ages and all sources of usual source of care. Once again, in the case of having no usual source of care, blacks are more likely to receive the service for middle age groups than others. But that trend actually flips amongst older adults, and this is a little bit of an anomaly. So amongst older adults, whites are actually more likely than blacks to receive colonoscopy in the context of having no usual source of care. Once again, amongst the elderly, going from having no usual source of care to a place is significant for all three racial and ethnic groups. By now, you should start hearing some themes that are starting to repeat themselves a little bit. One thing I want to push the data a little bit once I go back is sort of understanding the degree to which these lower rates for the elderly are clinically appropriate or not. We'll see what our data will support in terms of determining the degree to which what's optimal here. That said, once again, for middle age, in the case of having no usual source of care, blacks are more likely than whites to have received this service, as are Hispanics. This pattern is repeated for middle-aged people with no usual source of care. So once again, we see whites less likely to get the service in this context of suboptimal care than blacks and Hispanics. And once again, moving from no usual source of care to a place matters for all races and ethnicities, and that makes a difference. The same occurs with elderly. Winding up here, I promise, in case your eyes are glazing over at these colors. For exercise advice for individuals who are obese, once again, going from none to a place, in this case, matters only for Hispanics. And once again, we have this phenomenon where for middle-aged individuals, blacks are more likely than Hispanics to get exercise advice even in the context of no usual source of care. This also is repeated somewhat with the elderly, but actually this is the case in the context of when people have a place as a usual source of care. We observe this racial and ethnic difference. And the last one is advice to stop smoking for smokers. And this is where the sample size gets a little smaller. And in fact, you'll see here, actually, you have none for blacks and elderly blacks who report a place as a usual source of care. And that's for the simple fact that essentially that state is 100% predictive of having received this service. So they drop out of the model. Going from none to a place matters for whites, for middle-aged individuals. And once again, for elderly people with no usual source of care, Hispanics are more likely than whites to receive this service. So I just threw a lot of stuff at you, I realize. Hopefully you sort of heard a little bit of repetition in these findings. And I think there is, first of all, a generally consistent pattern where place is almost always a better place to be than having no usual source of care. And so that policy implication is certainly clear. And I guess the second is it gets a little murkier as you talk about gains from moving from a place to a person. I want to add some caveats there. I mean, this is in this instance of these clinical services that should and may be to some degree sort of baked into the operations of a place in terms of what happens every time. So these may be somewhat less sensitive to these types of usual source of care than other types of services. The other finding that sort of kept popping up quite a bit is that for whatever reason, and we can talk about this a little bit, whites seem to fare more poorly than blacks or Hispanics in this situation where they have no usual source of care. I would say that a lot of this sort of raises what I call why questions, some of which we may be able to explore further in the data, some of which we may not be. But as I mentioned, some of this may be due to unobserved need or perceived risk that we're not observing. There may be unobserved motivation to seek out these services that we are not able to observe. And then finally, we, at least as we measured these things, we don't measure any differences that may vary by race and ethnicity in sort of the type of place of care. So the characteristics of the place of care. So the example I thought of was sort of a minute clinic as opposed to a community health center, where those environments may actually be different in ways that we're not able to observe. So in memory of my friend Judy Schnogel, the cute dog photo to conclude my my presentation. So thank you, and I'm happy to take some questions. And then if they get difficult, I'll leave and turn them over to Nancy.